As a plant-based cheese company, Daiya has never talked about beef in an ad before, because someone somewhere once had a beef with saying beef and plant-based together. So putting a slice of Daiya cheese on a beef burger, not okay. Well, our delicious melty cheese has a beef with your beef about beef, because any step towards plant-forward eating is a step in the right direction. Daiya, 100% plant-based, even if you're not. Now made with Daiya Oat Cream Blend.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Are you looking for a view of the world that's a bit different? Hi, I'm Jason Palmer, a host of The Weekend Intelligence, a podcast from The Economist. Join us to hear the stories that matter most to our correspondents and editors. Every Saturday, we introduce you to people and ideas that take you outside the ordinary and expand your horizons one episode at a time. Join us and see the world from a new perspective. To listen free until May 31st, search Spotify for The Weekend Intelligence.
In the year leading up to the 2020 election, we're counting down the biggest scandals in American political history. This is number 45, the bribery scandal that brought down California Representative Duke Cunningham.
Picture this. You're on a luxury yacht docked on the Potomac River just 2 miles from the White House. As you take a seat on the deck, a 63-year-old man dressed in pajama bottoms and a turtleneck pours you a glass of champagne. The bottle reflects the neon light of a vintage lava lamp, bubbling away on the yacht's luxurious bar.
This isn't the final moment of some terrible 70s romantic comedy. It's 2004, and the married father of three pouring the champagne is Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham of San Diego.
In just one short year, every major newspaper in America will run a headline about this yacht, calling it a party palace. Duke will lose everything: his job, his family, his reputation, and finally, his freedom.
But right now, he's only interested in figuring out how to get you into that luxurious bedroom with the captain's quarters sign on the door. He waggles his eyebrows at you in the faint glow of the lava lamp.
Suddenly, you remember you have somewhere to be in the morning. You scramble up and make excuses. He offers to drive you home, but you'd rather call a cab. As you wave goodbye, it suddenly occurs to you to wonder, how does he afford a yacht on a congressman's salary?
Welcome to Political Scandals, a Parcast original. I'm Richard.
And I'm Kate.
You can find all episodes of Political Scandals and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Political Scandals for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Political Scandals in the search bar.
At Parcast, we are grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
And if you enjoyed today's episode, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help. Capitol Hill corruption is like an Ouroboros, eternally feeding on its own tail. In 1989, Congressman Jim Bates, a Democrat from California, was the first person to be formally censured in the House for sexual harassment. This was to be the end of Bates' career and the beginning of another one that would turn out to be even worse.
With Bates bogged down in scandal, the Republicans were looking for someone to swoop in and steal his seat in the 44th District. Enter Randy Cunningham, former Navy fighter pilot, former Pentagon liaison, currently a washed-up CNN commentator.
Cunningham had earned his nickname Duke after shooting down a MiG in Vietnam in 1972. By the mid-80s, his squadron was mocking his poor spelling by calling it Dukelexia. By 1990, he was 49 years old, out of shape, past his prime, and obsessed with reclaiming his former glory.
The Gulf War had just begun, and a Vietnam War hero turned TV news pundit was exactly the kind of candidate the Republicans needed. And a congressional campaign was what Duke needed to turn around his sagging career. Never mind the fact that he had no interest or experience in politics. He wasn't even registered to vote.
Cunningham entered the race, and before he had even won the primary, he was taking aim at the scandal-ridden Democratic incumbent. He adopted the campaign slogan, "A congressman we can be proud of."
Big words, which he would immediately fail to live up to. During the primary, Cunningham ran racist attack ads against his Egypt-born opponent, Joe Gagassian. The mailers claimed, with no evidence, that Gagassian was bankrolled by Arab oil interests.
It was so transparently racist that the chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee had to apologize.
But even though it embarrassed the party, the tactic worked. He won not only his primary, but the general election. Duke Cunningham was on his way to the U.S. Congress.
The Republican Party gained a House seat, and Duke gained a new audience for the braggadocio and tall tales that had made him so perfect for cable news. He bragged to the press about coaching Olympic swimmers, which he'd never done. He liked to tell people he was the inspiration for the film Top Gun, which was also not true.
An LA Times article later opined that no one, including his staff, considered Cunningham a deep thinker.
But his new colleagues were taken in by his charisma and his Navy experience, especially as Congress debated whether to use military force in Iraq. The freshman representative was put on the prestigious House Armed Services Committee, where he took on the air of a celebrity.
At first, Duke was arrogant but well-liked. He was also a hardliner about ethics. He refused a congressional pay raise, saying that politicians shouldn't be able to vote to raise their own salaries. In his 1992 re-election campaign, he hammered his opponent for his ties to defense contractors who'd been convicted of defrauding the government. Of course, he also, on the record, called for the entire Democratic House leadership to be, quote, lined up and shot.
There were some hits and misses, but his aggressive rhetoric only made his base love him more. In 1994, Republicans took the majority in Congress for the first time in four decades, and Duke became an assistant to the new majority whip, Tom DeLay.
If you've been following this podcast, you already know that Tom DeLay was later forced to resign for corruption. And even for him, Cunningham was apparently a little too much. DeLay considered him to be unstable, out of touch, and a loose cannon.
He wasn't wrong. Cunningham's talk-first-think-later strategy was rapidly destroying the reputation he'd come into Congress with. During a 1995 argument over the Clean Water Act, of all things, Duke screamed on the House floor that his colleagues wanted to, quote, put homos in the military.
Representative Bernie Sanders tried to object, and Duke snapped at him to, quote, sit down, you socialist.
Once Cunningham finally yielded the floor, the openly gay congressman Barney Frank had some strong words for him. The argument about gays in the military completely derailed the discussion of the Clean Water Act, which again was the bill that sparked this whole controversy.
A few weeks later, Human Rights Campaign Director Elizabeth Birch was summoned to Cunningham's office. She was expecting to talk about a variety of issues, including gay rights. Once Duke closed the door, he asked her how people know if they're gay. He eventually blurted out that he'd, quote, loved men during his time in the Navy.
However, Cunningham did offer an apology to his colleagues. He should have used the term homosexuals, not homos.
This was only the beginning. In late 1995, Duke broke his hand in a physical fight with Virginia Democrat Jim Moran.
Earlier, Cunningham said in an interview that he would like to shoot Vietnam War protesters.
In 1996, he called President Clinton's judicial appointees soft on crime for being too lenient on sentencing for drug dealers. This became especially funny 4 months later when Duke's son was caught smuggling 400 pounds of marijuana and then attempting to escape while out on bail.
But all the drama didn't hurt Duke's career one bit. In 1997, after being elected for a fourth term, the 56-year-old congressman got a seat on the powerful Appropriations Committee, which controls the federal budget. This committee is known as the most powerful in Washington. It's also notorious for corrupting even the purest civil servants. With trillions of dollars under their control, the committee's members are targets for every lobbyist, foreign agent, and unscrupulous businessman in Washington.
And all the sordid characters in D.C.'s underbelly already knew Duke's weaknesses: a hot temper, no filter, and a love of luxury.
Cunningham was assigned to the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, which is in charge of handing out million and billion dollar defense contracts. For military contractors, a single vote on the subcommittee can mean the difference between having a profitable year and going out of business.
To go along with his new assignment, Duke wanted a new toy. He bought a 65-foot houseboat from congressional colleague Sonny Callahan for $180,020. He kept it moored at the Capitol Yacht Club and moved in full-time.
Soon after, he started inviting defense contractors on board for drinks. In broad daylight, it wasn't a good look. Colleagues started talking, but nobody wanted to get on the bad side of the notoriously short-fused congressman.
Lobbyists got the message Cunningham was sending loud and clear. When a brand new Defense Appropriations Subcommittee member starts hosting private tete-a-tetes with defense contractors on his brand new private boat, it's not hard to guess that he might be open to some, shall we say, congratulations gifts.
After the break, Duke gets paid.
Now back to the story.
In July of 1997, 45-year-old Congressman Duke Cunningham was gifted an $11,000 Sea-Doo jet ski to complement his newly purchased yacht. The sender? Brent Wilkes, founder of a document scanning company called ADCS, for Automated Document Conversion System.
Yes, a whole company just to scan documents. This is how weird the world of defense contracting is.
Even in 1997, most private companies with a need to scan a lot of documents would have just bought a scanner and hired a secretary to man it. But not the Pentagon. They paid millions of dollars to private companies for the task.
Brent Wilkes didn't scan papers significantly better than the next guy. What he did do well was build relationships on Capitol Hill.
When Duke accepted the Sea-Doo, already a violation of House gifting rules, Brent Wilkes knew he had the all clear to keep wooing him. He started buying Duke meals and drinks, and even let him use his private limousine. With Duke Cunningham's help on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, ADCS won the contract for a particularly enormous scanning project involving over a million documents related to the United States' involvement in Panama.
Now, here's where the real money is for a guy like Brent Wilkes. You don't get personal limousine rich by billing taxpayers modestly. ADCS asked the federal government to pay for nearly $3 million in equipment the company supposedly needed for the Panama project, including an $85,000 flat-screen LCD monitor. Consumer LCD monitors cost around $2,000 at the time.
The Pentagon isn't entirely naive, even about a tricky subject like computer monitors. Wilkes' most outrageous invoices were rejected in November of 1998 to the tune of about $750,000 in all.
But Wilkes wasn't worried. He called Duke Cunningham and explained the situation. It took a few weeks of back and forth, with the congressman sending endless emails to Pentagon officials, emphasizing the importance of not holding up the Panama Project. Before Thanksgiving, almost all the invoices were paid.
There might be a reason beyond just the power of temptation that 1998 was the year Duke Cunningham broke bad. He was diagnosed with prostate cancer that fall at the age of 56. The prognosis was good, but he had to undergo surgery and radiation. To someone with Duke's ego, it must have been devastating to face an enemy within his own body. It's possible that the scare shook him so deeply that his old patriotic values no longer made sense to him. Maybe facing down death, he felt like it wouldn't hurt to live just a little more outrageously with the time he had left.
Or maybe he was just the same old short-tempered hypocrite he'd always been. Once he was declared cancer-free, Duke was invited to speak to a group of prostate cancer survivors. When a 74-year-old World War II vet in the audience heckled him about defense spending, the congressman responded by flipping him the middle finger and shouting words we can't repeat. At the same event, Duke took another homophobic dig at an old rival, joking that the rectal exam he had to undergo was, quote, just not natural, unless maybe you're Barney Frank.
Duke was forced to apologize for both of these outbursts, but the scandals didn't scare away his old friends at the scanner company. In 1999, Brent Wilkes introduced Duke to a consultant who worked for ADCS, Mitchell Wade.
Wade wasn't just a bribery specialist like Wilkes. He was later accused of threatening to murder competitors for defense contracts, including at least one executive who'd competed for the Panama contract.
Wade saw something he liked the moment he met Duke. The congressman was willing to play ball, and his ego was easy to stroke. In 1999, Cunningham was responsible for nearly $10 million in defense contracts going to ADCS. And in return, Duke was treated like a king. ADCS paid for his $4,000 dinners at French fine dining restaurants. He got to use the company's shared Learjet for private flights home to San Diego, which cost ADCS $17,000 a pop.
Weirdly, that last part was legal. If a defense contractor can come up with a seemingly legitimate purpose to fly a representative on one of their planes, it's allowed, since it saves taxpayers the flight money. But it's a pretty big loophole in the gifting rules, especially when you consider what a great opportunity this is to get an elected official alone.
Brent Wilkes founded several new companies over the next couple of years under the heading Group W Holdings, Inc. He had a W company for everything, from catering to jet sharing to photocopying. They all seemed to get a lot of government defense contracts, all awarded by Cunningham's subcommittee.
In 2000, Wilkes raised eyebrows by buying Duke's houseboat, the Kelly C, for $100,000. Duke still had a mortgage on the $180,000 boat, which Wilkes took over and began paying for him. To make it even more suspicious, Duke didn't even move out of the boat after Wilkes bought it. He kept living there rent-free.
This even upset Duke's wife, Nancy. She usually stayed out of his Capitol Hill business, but when she found out about the blatant bribery, she made a stink.
After Nancy called her husband's office to complain to his staff about the indiscretion, Duke canceled the sale. But he'd already deposited the checks. He kept the money and the boat.
That's probably not what Nancy was suggesting, but she didn't have to know.
ADCS and the other Group W companies kept getting multi-million dollar deals. Whenever they missed a deadline or needed another cash infusion, Duke got on the phone and made it happen.
Eventually, Brent Wilkes and his old consultant Mitchell Wade split up, and Wade opened his own contracting company, MZM Inc. He wanted the same sweetheart deals that Group W had been getting, so he got busy bribing too. In November 2001, Wade took Cunningham antiquing. They bought $12,000 in furnishings, paid for with a business check.
Yep, antique furniture. How they passed that off as a military expenditure is anyone's guess.
Wade also avoided the biggest mistake Brent Wilkes had made, losing the trust of Duke's family by bribing them, too. Nancy Cunningham and her eldest daughter, April, got seats on the board of Wade's wife's charity. He also bought both women expensive jewelry. So that 19-year-old Carrie Cunningham wouldn't feel left out, Wade hired her for 2 weeks and paid her $4,000.
Wade was like a best friend who happened to be a magic genie. Whatever Cunningham wanted, it appeared. Wade even offered to provide him with sex workers, though the congressman claims he declined the offer.
But he did accept another $14,000 in antiques, $13,000 to buy a vintage Rolls Royce, and more than $19,000 to restore it to glistening condition. Then the pièce de résistance, a $140,000 42-foot yacht, which he named the Dukester.
Wade also laid out $17,000 to repair Duke's old boat, the Kelly C, which needed an engine. After the new engine was installed, Duke had the boat sent to New York, where another friend, Thomas Kontoyannis, bought it for $600,000.
Kontoyannis was at the time involved in a $92 million mortgage fraud conspiracy that wasn't uncovered until 2009. It's unclear how much Duke knew.
Enough, perhaps, to command a pretty high price for a used $180,000 boat.
Corruption was, by now, Duke's routine. It actually seemed to mellow the congressman out. Now that he was busy taking bribes, he stopped starting fights on the House floor and even apologized sincerely to Barney Frank. Now the only time the former ace fighter pilot showed his hot temper was when one of his colleagues tried to hold up a big contract.
And that rarely happened. In February of 2003, Wade's company won a $12 million a year contract for a data collection program called Project Fortress. For Wade, it was another nice payday, and Cunningham earned a reward too, in the form of two $9,000 laser hunting simulator games. Apparently, Duke was too sluggish from his filet mignon diet to do much real-life hunting anymore.
In the fall of 2003, Cunningham decided he and his family deserved a better home than his suburban place in Del Mar. He found the perfect luxury home in ritzy Rancho Santa Fe and paid $2.55 million for it. His annual salary at the time was $154,700.
Duke financed the new home by selling his old place to Mitchell Wade for $1.675 million. Wade also paid the capital gains tax of $115,000 that Duke owed on the sale. Then he turned around and put Duke's old house back on the market for a $700,000 loss.
More accurately, that $700K wasn't lost. It went right into Cunningham's pocket. It was the biggest single bribe the congressman ever took.
Even that paled next to Wade's company's profits. By 2004, the young MZM Inc. had earned $150 million from defense contracts. For 2005, they had another $60 million lined up. The war in Iraq was lucrative for contractors. MZM was sending over personnel ranging from translators to interrogators.
In December of 2004, the congressman celebrated his 63rd birthday with a party to which he invited a group of wounded Iraq war vets. If those soldiers knew that their host took bribes to decide who was running their operations, they might have wanted to do something other than sing Happy Birthday.
It would be Duke's last birthday as a free man for a long time. The San Diego Union-Tribune had gotten wind of his peculiar home sale. On June 8, 2005, reporter Marcus Stern called Cunningham at his office to ask about it.
It wasn't really a question. Stern already knew the answer. This was just for the record.
Duke claimed it was an ordinary sale. He didn't know why Wade turned around and resold the home a few months later for a loss. Bizarrely, he changed the subject by claiming that he, Duke Cunningham, had never smoked marijuana.
There were few politicians in D.C. willing to stand up to Cunningham's wrath. But reporters were a different story. And so were federal investigators. On June 12th, the San Diego Union-Tribune ran its first of many stories on the congressman's corruption. This one was just about the home sale, but that alone was enough to get the FBI involved. Special Agent Maurice Hatier moved to open an investigation.
Coming up, the golden noose tightens for Duke Cunningham. Now back to the story.
In June 2005, the San Diego Union-Tribune ran an expose on Congressman Duke Cunningham's fraudulent home sale. The revelations led the FBI to open an investigation.
This was a huge deal. Congressmen are rarely tried for crimes committed while in office. If the agents assigned to the Duke Cunningham inquiry did any little procedural thing wrong, it might blow the whole case. The FBI also had to notify the U.S. attorney of any investigation into a current elected official, which meant they wouldn't be able to keep it under wraps for long.
But the agents had one asset that wasn't bound by FBI procedures: journalists. A few days after the Tribune story, the North County Times broke another one, this time about Cunningham living on a yacht owned by contractor Mitchell Wade.
Not to be outdone, the San Diego Union-Tribune ran interviews with two women who had been entertained on the congressman's yacht, where he changed into pajama bottoms, offered them champagne, and showed off his prized lava lamp.
Duke had barely even bothered to cover his tracks. The more the investigators dug, the more they found. On July 1, 2005, the FBI had enough to execute search warrants against Cunningham's home, the MZM offices, and Wade's home simultaneously.
On the advice of his attorneys, Wade agreed to cooperate. He immediately made it clear to the FBI that he might have tempted the congressman initially, but it was Duke who made sure the money kept coming. There was even a handwritten chart of how much money in defense contracts Duke had promised in exchange for bribes of various sizes. As the cost of the bribes went up, so did the contracts offered.
It was immediately obvious to Duke that, with Wade cooperating, he was hopeless. It would be impossible to hold on to his political career now. On July 14th, he issued a statement withdrawing from his re-election campaign.
Nancy Cunningham was blindsided. Even though she'd taken some of the gifts from Wade herself, she claimed to have no idea how extensive the corruption was. She certainly didn't know that she was living in a home paid for by a bribe. After the raids, she moved out and began to prepare for a divorce. She told reporters that as far as she was concerned, her husband no longer existed.
That hit Duke hard. By August, he was nearly suicidal and taking three different psychiatric medications for depression, anxiety, and insomnia.
The medication didn't do anything to ease the pain of a guilty conscience. He was able to forget how horrible his behavior was while it was still a lucrative secret, but now that he had to answer for it, he couldn't live with himself.
In September, he told his attorneys there had been a change of plans. He wanted to make amends. He intended to plead guilty.
That sounds noble, and for a moment it was. But when Duke realized that the charges of bribery, conspiracy, money laundering, tax evasion, and witness tampering could land him in jail for as much as 30 years, he got cold feet. He was already almost 64 and a cancer survivor. If he pleaded guilty to everything, he'd never see the outside of a prison cell again. He wanted a better deal.
It took months of wrangling. Finally, he agreed to plead guilty to tax evasion and conspiracy. He also promised to forfeit all of his ill-gotten possessions, including his home and most of its contents. In exchange for telling prosecutors everything, the other charges would be dropped. He would ultimately be sentenced to 8 years and 4 months in prison, plus $3.66 million in restitution and fines. With good behavior, he'd only serve 85% of the sentence, meaning he'd leave prison shortly before his 71st birthday.
On November 28, 2005, Duke Cunningham formally pled guilty to accepting at least $2.4 million in bribes. It was the biggest corruption conviction against a sitting congressman in U.S. history.
That wasn't the end of it. The investigation found that Mitchell Wade and his company had made illegal campaign contributions to two other lawmakers, Representative Virgil Good of Virginia, who agreed to request money for an MZM facility in his district, and Representative Catherine Harris of Florida, who asked for funding for a counterintelligence contract. Good and Harris both claimed not to know that the donations they received from MZM were illegal. No charges were brought against them. Wade, though, was in deep trouble.
Brent Wilkes was pulled into the scandal too, thanks to testimony from both Cunningham and Wilkes. He was charged with 30 counts of fraud, conspiracy, and money laundering, and eventually convicted of 13. The prosecution recommended a sentence of 60 years. He was only sentenced to 12.
For his part, Wilkes pulled in another co-conspirator, Kyle Fago, the former executive director of the CIA. That's the number three man at the agency. He pled guilty to steering a multi-million dollar CIA contract into Wilkes' hands in exchange for all expense paid vacations, five-figure restaurant tabs, and a standing job offer from Wilkes' company. A host of other unrelated charges surfaced as well, from hooking up his mistress with a six-figure CIA job to punching a bicyclist in the face during a traffic dispute.
During Fago's trial, the prosecutor lashed out against the former CIA director for continuing to call himself a patriot despite exploiting a national crisis by defrauding his country for years. Fago's attorney counter-argued that the defendant may be a criminal, but that doesn't mean he's not a patriot.
He may have been right. If we've learned anything so far, it's that corruption is as American as apple pie. These convictions were coming down around the same time as Jack Abramoff's lobbying scandal, which we previously discussed. There have been a host of similar incidents stretching all the way from our nation's founding to the present day. Wherever there's a law, there's bound to be a loophole. And where there's a loophole, someone is bound to exploit it.
As for Duke Cunningham, he served his sentence in Tucson, Arizona, at a minimum security prison where he worked 40 hours a week for wages of 40 cents an hour or less. In February of 2013, he was released to a halfway house, and on June 4th of the same year, he was allowed to go completely free.
Duke now opposes the mandatory minimum sentences for drug offenders he voted for while in Congress. In a 2014 interview, he described meeting people in prison who were as young as 19 when they were sentenced to a decade or more, all thanks to laws he himself helped to pass.
Duke wishes he could take back many of his other votes, including a law banning convicted felons from owning guns. That same bill is now barring him from going back to hunting. It makes you wonder what would change if every politician had to live out the results of their most controversial votes.
If you ask Duke, not much. Another quote from that same 2014 interview, "The only cure for politics is embalming fluid."
Thanks for listening to Political Scandals. We'll be back next week with scandal number 44, the story of Huey Long, a governor so radical his enemies couldn't allow him to live.
For more information on this scandal, we found the book Feasting on the Spoils by Seth Hetina especially helpful. If you're interested in reading more about this story, this book is a great place to start. We also want to commend the work of Marcus Stern and Jerry Kammer, whose 2005 reporting about the Cunningham scandal won the Pulitzer Prize.
You can find all episodes of Political Scandals and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker.
To stream Political Scandals on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Political Scandals in the search bar. We'll see you next time.
Political Scandals was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound designed by Anthony Valsic, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, Freddie Beckley, and Paul Mahler. This episode of Political Scandals was written by Yelena War, with writing assistance by Kate Gallagher, and stars Kate Leonard and Richard Rossner.